Reverend Dina Schoonemaker is a very, very special also. Keep saying that over and over again, but a very special light for the Chizuk Mission. And Baruch Hashem, not only we had her speak for us here in Eretz Yisrael, but we were graced by her appearance and her unbelievable words of wisdom this past August for a Muncie retreat that we did. She spoke on Tomer Devorah, and anybody that heard it, it was just unbelievable. She speaks in many, many of the different, the different seminaries.
The Chol is my main place, but other places too, for sure.
And also just vadim and classes, virtual, here, there, and everywhere, and we're very grateful that you're able to be with
us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I feel that we have a very specific mission today for this next 45 minutes, 50 minutes or so, which is really to prepare for this trip down south. And the first question we ask ourselves is, why exactly are we going, and what do we want to accomplish? And I know that in general, my students went this year, and last year I took my students to Hostage Square. And I have to think about it a lot. What am I really trying to accomplish? Because some of the things that you see are not always so easy to see. And you know, as it is, we always struggle with our like emotional equilibrium, and we're very afraid to expose ourselves to things which could take us in a bad direction. So I like to talk about the uplifting message and how this is actually going to be good for our emotional equilibrium instead of bad. And I'll start with something that maybe some of you have heard. I've said this everywhere, so I apologize if anybody's heard me say this. But you know, I've been here since the beginning of this war, and it's really heavy. It's heavy to watch and to see all the things that go on. And one of the things that I worked on a lot is like how we maintain a healthy attitude during wartime. In fact, right now, it's a year later, and the subject of my vadim are my groups that I give for married women in different communities, our topic is wartime gratitude, hakar satov, during challenging times. And the fact is that dafka, when life is challenging, is when you have to just kind of hone in and realize, focus on the good and notice it. So what do we do when we get exposed to the things that are not so good? And how are we supposed to deal with this? So I wanted to share with you a few different messages that I have taken in over the year that I think are really relevant to you and what you're about to do today. So the very first one is the one that I speak about a lot, which is that people every so often send me inspiring clips. I'll talk about that also, the inspiring messages. And a few months into the war, somebody sent me this little video clip of a young chayal who lost his leg in the war. And he's sitting there with one leg, and he's being interviewed, and he said, you know, I almost died, and I lost my leg, and this is the way I'm going to be for the rest of my life. He said, but it's worth it if the Jewish people are going to be unified. And I beg you to stay unified, because if not, it wasn't so worth it for me to lose my leg. And he said it with such sincerity, and he's so young, is that it was worth it. If we are going to be unified, if we can just like be brothers, then it was worth being the rest of my life like this. It stayed in my heart, and a few days later I was preparing a class, and you know, I have a little bit of like an associative kind of brain, and I opened up the Gemara in Shabbos Lamed Aleph, and the Gemara says that a man comes to Hillel and Shammai and says, teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot. And Hillel answers him, Da'alecha sani l'chavercha lo tavid, which means don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. And at that moment, I suddenly had this image of this chayal standing on one foot saying, let's be good to each other and let's not fight with each other. And in my mind, I kind of locked that, you know, teach me the whole Torah on one foot, to this young man who is basically teaching the whole Torah on one foot. And the Sfas Emes talks about that passage in the Gemara, and he says, what do we think about that? Forget about the Chayav for a minute. What do you think when you teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot? You think that it's the way the Torah says, give me your elevator pitch. Meaning, this man was not Jewish. He says, teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot. Give me a one-liner that summarizes your whole Torah. And that is the Pshat of the Gemara, that's really what was going on there. But the Sfas Emes says something much deeper. He says, when the man says, teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot, he meant the human existence is very shaky. It's very wobbly. We kind of feel like we're always standing on one foot. Our lives are so many things go on, and so many emotions, and so many things that make you feel not so stable. And teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot means give me the Torah's answer to being stable in such an anxiety-provoking world. That's the way the Sfas understands this. And what's the answer? Dalechasani lechaver chalotavid, which means if you are going to be self-absorbed, then you are going to be very anxious and not stable. But the Torah's answer to stability in such an unstable world is reach out, understand somebody else's reality, and try to be good to other people. And that will stabilize you. Meaning when you're in a self-absorbed place, you feel very not stable. But when you actually reach out and you understand somebody else's reality and you care about them, that stabilizes you. So ladies, I'm thinking that this trip today is really about that Gemara. We're all living in this very anxiety-provoking world, but you're going to try to understand other people's experiences and to care about them. And it ends up making you feel more stable. I have to tell you, the PS to that story was something that I've told over many times. Was anybody at the Project Inspire Shabbos last year in this group? No. Okay, so I'll tell you what happened there. I was asked to speak a few times over Shabbos, and they gave a title to my share called Treasures Found in Gaza. Different messages that we learned, and I'm going to share some of them with you today. So one of my treasures found in Gaza was this young chayal on the one foot with his message. And I'm speaking to the group on Shabbos afternoon, and all of a sudden I start telling the story about this chayal. I don't even know his name, but you know, the one who said it was worth losing my foot if we care about each other and if we're unified. A girl who happened to be the daughter of the director of Project Inspire Shabbaton, she gets up and she runs out of the room in the middle of my speech. And I could tell there was something that she was reacting to, and I felt bad. I said, maybe it was too graphic. I'm talking about this young guy. I didn't know what I did. But then a few minutes later, she comes back, and the organizer of the program, Yossi Friedman, is standing at the door with his arms folded, waiting for me to finish my speech. I said, oh, I'm in trouble with the principal. I don't know what I did wrong, but I did something wrong. He waited till everybody finished this, the speech, and people asked their questions, they left. And then he comes over and he says, you mentioned the chayal who lost his leg, who said that it was worth it for the unity. I said, yes, I did. He said, I was also very inspired by that chayal. Now I'm going to tell you a secret that you can't tell anybody at this convention. I said, what? He said, I flew him to America. He's upstairs on the third floor of this hotel, Stamford, Connecticut. He says, you don't know what it was like. He was in the middle of rehab. I had to go to Tel HaShomer 4 times to convince him to come. Getting him to America in his state, it was still pretty early in the war, very, very difficult. But I felt that this guy needs to give us a message about unity. He said, and after Shabbos, he's going to surprise the whole crowd. He's going to come out. He's going to, you know, tell everybody his message. So I was like very moved. And then he says, I'm thinking to myself, I started a whole VOD on this concept of, you know, judging people favorably and unity, all because of him. And I kept on saying the chayal with one foot. I didn't know who he was. I had all my groups working on this because of him. And he's in this hotel in Stamford, Connecticut. Then Yossi Friedman says to me, well, you could do something good right now. He said, he's very shy, he's very overwhelmed, he's Israeli, he's not religious. All of a sudden he comes to this convention and there's like a million religious Jews walking around. He doesn't know what he's doing. He says, yeah, I'm Israeli. My family came in Aliyah when I was 11 years old. He says, go up to the third floor. I'll tell him to come out. Give him some chizuk. This is like a hard situation for him. I go up to the third floor and I say to him, I am so honored to meet you. Because of you, all of my groups are learning about Achdut Yisrael. And then I said to myself, tell them the Gemara, don't tell them the Gemara. Is it tacky? Is it not? I took a look at him. I said, you know what? Just tell them. I said, you know that there's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos where a man says, teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot. Meantime, he's leaning against the wall with his one foot. And I said to him, and Hillel, first of all, he said, this is just, you know, to understand people's backgrounds. He says to me, what's a Gemara? He grew up in Israel, didn't know what a Gemara was. I said to him, an ancient text. I said to him, Hillel. He said, who's Hillel? I told him a little bit about Hillel. And then I said, and Hillel said, don't do to others what you don't want done to you. He says to me, voila. He says to me, can you please write that down for me on a piece of paper? I want to hold that text, that source in my pocket. And I have some connection with him. We want to help each other a little bit back and forth. His name is Shalom Shitrit. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. And he's on this mission to get Klal Yisrael together. He said, because it was worth it. I'll go my whole life with one foot if Jews love each other. So I think that I always have him in mind for these kinds of missions. Because your purpose and what you're trying to do is two things, I think, or maybe even three. One of them is nosa ba'olam chaveiro. It's to understand the burden of another person. And sometimes you have to be in something and see it in order to really understand what people experience. And nosa ba'olam chaveiro is such an important Jewish midah. To be able to go out of your own experience and meet somebody from a different culture, different religious orientation, different ideology, and to really be able to bear his burden. And I think that that's what you're going to accomplish today. And it's something so incredible and so beautiful to feel connected to Jews who are so different than us, but who have a message for us, and we want to understand their reality. Now, you would think that it would make you feel heavy to bear the burden of other people. It's actually the most uplifting thing to be able to go out of your own experience and to understand other people's. And I want to tell you that I once was reading in a Musar Sefer that was written for yeshiva guys and was encouraging them to go out of their own experience and try to understand other Jews. And the Rav who wrote the Sefer, he says, you know, people love to climb a mountain just to get to the top and look at the view. And when they finally trek up that mountain and they look at the view from the top, what do they see? They see a very expansive world where they're only one speck in that big reality. And you'd think that that would be depressing. I'm so irrelevant. Look at this big world, I'm just a speck. But what do people say when they get to the top of the mountain? They say it's exhilarating, uplifting, breathtaking. There is something so healthy about seeing outside of yourself and seeing others and seeing a big, big world of people to care about. And that's why trips like this are uplifting. Because the things you see are not always easy to see. But getting out of your own experience and understanding somebody else's reality is actually the most stabilizing, uplifting thing that we can do. The opposite of being at the top of the mountain, looking at the whole expansive world, is what we see today in today's society. It's being at the bottom of the mountain with your selfie. Selfies have become such a, like, everybody's very into themselves. And people are not much happier. You know, everybody's like just very into themselves. So the idea of like being into other people is just so, it's so beautiful. And you came to Israel at the most difficult time, but this is the most stabilizing, uplifting, beautiful Jewish thing to do, is to understand other people's realities. And Shalom Shitrit would be very proud of you, because that's exactly what he lost his life for, and that's what he's asking people to do. And I wish I could have connected him to you. But, you know, he says to me, I said, all my students are learning, you know, about Achdut because of you. He says, oh, I'll come speak for you. You know, when we both get back to Yerushalayim, you know, to Israel, I'll come speak for you. He came back to Israel. What happened was, on that Saturday night, that Motzei Shabbos, after the program, the lights were dim, and Project Aspire had their project, their thing, and then they said, now we have a surprise. And in the dark, you see this person, like, limping up to the stage. And he got up there and he gave a very short message. And basically his message was, I lost my leg, but I found my nation. And it was just beautiful. And he got a standing ovation from over 1,000 people, and the chief rabbi Lau was there. And it was just beautiful. There was not one, you know, dry eye. And by the time he got back to Israel and I contacted him, he already had so many requests that I had to go through his agent. 19 years old with an agent. But you know what? Like, you know, it was just all over Israeli TV and all over everywhere. But we're still in contact a little bit. And, you know, every time he hears that Jews, you know, want to connect, it just makes him so happy, makes him feel that his situation was so worthwhile. So I think the second thing we're trying to do is Kiddush Hashem. And the Kiddush Hashem is for people to see a lot of the places in the South are very, very staunchly secular. And, you know, there's a stereotype about people, about religious people. I took my students last year, I teach in Chala, and I took my students to Hostage Square, you know, which is this place by Tel Aviv University, where the hostage families and relatives were sitting, and, you know, Unified before it became so political, and just like talking about their experience, and it was a chance to come and connect. It was art and music, and you know, people just sitting and talking. I took my students, and like, you know, this is just to understand how beautiful it is. I had an afternoon off, and I said, I want to go to Hostage Square. I sent out a message to my students. I said, anybody want to come? I'm going to Hostage Square. I have like 4 or 5 spots in my car. 85 girls wanted to come. So this was no longer in my car. This was 2 buses going to Hostage Square. We walked in there, and we sat down by one tent of a kibbutz of Nir Oz, one of the places where it lost a lot of people. We sat down, and the people who were sitting there were friends of hostages and family members. And they look at us, and one of them said very tongue-in-cheek, you're from the other side. Because we were like these religious girls. And then he smiled, and he said, and it means all that much more to us that you came today. You know, because they view us as being from the other side. And the fact that, you know, that you wanted to be here, he said, you don't know how much it means to us. And then one of the ladies says, oh, what brings you to Tel Aviv today? You're going to the mall, you're going here. And the girl said, you. We have no other agenda. We didn't come somewhere else and we're dropping off here. We came to see you. It was so beautiful. I cannot tell you. And this is what you're doing. This is what you're trying to accomplish. This is what Kiddush Hashem means, to feel that religious people care about you. It's so important. So important. I don't know if you heard, there's an incredible story of a certain woman who was a hostage, who discovered her Judaism as a hostage. Did you hear this story?
Yeah.
You've heard this?
No.
I'll tell it quickly. There was a woman who was the head of the social events in her community, in her kibbutz, and a kiruv organization wanted to organize a ball game between the kids in the kibbutz and a bunch of religious kids. And she would have, this was pre-war, right? She would not have it. She called the rabbi from the religious community, and she said to him, if you come with your kids to play ball with us, we will stand at the entrance of our kibbutz and we will block you and not let you in. We don't need any religious influences. Comes October 7th, she was one of the hostages, and she was released in one of the hostage exchanges. She was interviewed by, I think, Ami magazine, if I'm not mistaken. And she's showing her burnt house and the destruction and the whole story of her being kidnapped. And then the person interviewing her said, I'm sure that the terrorists destroyed synagogues. I mean, they probably wanted to destroy Jewish life. She said, well, I could tell you that 23 different, you know, things that I know of, kibbutzim and settlements, there were no synagogues that were touched or affected. And then she said a little bit cynically, and you know why? Because there were no synagogues. Mm-hmm. I said, I fought against there being a synagogue in my neighborhood. We didn't want any synagogues. And she said when she was kidnapped, she spoke Arabic. She had very close Arab friends. And she said, I'm talking to my captor in Arabic. I can't even see him. And I'm saying to him, why are you doing this to me? I'm your friend. We're your friends. We believe in you. And he spat at her. He said, you're not a Jew. And she said in Arabic, I'm a Jew. I'm a Jew. And he put tape over her mouth. And she said, over there in that tunnel is where she suddenly discovered her Judaism. She said, he's right. He's telling me that I'm not a Jew. And I'm screaming, I am, I am. And then I'm realizing, but what do I have to say for my Jewish identity? And by the time she was released and then was interviewed by Amit magazine, she was designing the most gorgeous synagogue for their kibbutz. That was her story. So many stories you're gonna see and touch and, you know, just to experience. I want to go into a different idea of why we're going. So no zibba'ol is to understand the ability of somebody else to get out of your experience, to be part of a bigger world, to connect to people who are different than you, and to stabilize yourself in this very unstable world of standing on one foot. Then we have the Kiddush Hashem factor, which is that if somebody sees that a religious person cares about them, it just creates that achda, which is so necessary and so important. Now I'm going to share with you a third reason, which is that we can actually affect these people. We can actually help them. Sometimes we feel that I wish I could do something for somebody, but there's nothing I could do for them. I don't know them. They're not interested in a relationship with me. And here I want to share with you a very, very important Gemara. It's something that, you know, guides me with a lot of things, because this is true of us on a national level and on a personal level. There's a Gemara in Kiddushin Mem, and the Gemara says, Machshava Tova HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarfa Lemasa, which we generally say means Hashem counts good intentions as if they were actions. So I always bring the example, if I'm walking in Geula and some lady is collecting staka and I have no change, and I say to myself, I'll go to a store, I'll get change, and I'll come back and give her the money. By the time I come back, she's not there anymore. The Gemara tells you that you got schar as if you gave tzedakah, because Hashem knows your intentions. And the basic concept in that Gemara is that we can't micromanage the technical aspects of our lives. I wanted to light candles early this week, and then something spilled all over the floor. Meaning, Hashem knows that you have good intentions, and He counts intentions as actions. Okay, how do we take that Gemara? Sometimes we so much want to help somebody, whether it's a child of yours who just doesn't want to listen to what you have to say, or somebody who you really feel bad for, but you have no access to them. They don't want to hear from you, or it's not appropriate for you to approach them. Or people from other cultures, or people sitting in tunnels in Gaza, and you don't even know how to reach them, but you wish you could do something for them. So the Gemara talks about good intentions. I have to preface this, ladies, by telling you, I once had a very eerie thing happen to me. I was lecturing in America, and I walked into someplace. I'm about to go up to the podium, and a young married woman comes over to me, and she whispers one line into my ear, and then she like disappeared. She says to me, Mrs. Schoonmaker, I just want to tell you that when you get to Shemayim one day, there's going to be a surprise waiting for you there. And that's all she said, and then she left.
That's pretty creepy.
Now, it was pretty creepy, and it wasn't, if it would have been like negative, I would have been really scared. But she said it with such softness and sweetness, with a smile and a twinkle, and then she disappeared. I'm like, what is that? What's that all about? And then I had to get up and speak, not think about it. And then I realized, and I recognized her. And I realized who she was. She was a student of mine many years before, who was going through a personal struggle at the time. And she had come to consult with me, and I gave her a certain piece of advice of how I thought she needed to deal with her struggle. And it did not go over very well. She was not ready to hear it. And she didn't come back to me at all after that point. And I never really saw her again. This is her many years later. She was married. And what she wanted to tell me was, when you get to Shemayim, there's going to be a surprise waiting for you over there, because you think that your advice did not go anywhere. But you'll see where it went when you get to Shemayim. And she looked very functional and looked, she was doing well. She was not doing well at the time that I met her. But that's what she was trying to tell me, is that sometimes we think that we tried to help somebody and it didn't lead anywhere and nothing good came out of it. And she said, when you get to Shemayim, Achrei Mea Ve'Esrim, you know, there'll be a surprise there for you. It was such an interesting thing to say. But since then, I have developed a whole way of thinking around this. There are many things we do in this world that seem to heed no results. And then we get to Shemayim and we realize that Hashem counts things by intentions. Even more than, you know, sometimes I call this, I have these little like, these little icons of different ideas in Bitachon. I call this the Bert Kugel icon. You know, let's say, you know, you want to make something really nice for a Shabbos or for a Yontif, and you put a lot of effort into this really difficult recipe, and like you really wanted to do this for Kavod Shabbos, and then you just left it in the oven a little too long and it's burnt to a crisp. So in this world, you have nothing to put on the table. And when you get up to Shamayim, there's a beautiful kugel waiting for you, because it's all about intentions. Some people are going to get up to Shamayim and find out that they were the mother of the Gadol Hador. And the child in this world did not look like a Gadol Hador, the opposite. He was struggling and negative and acting out in every way possible. But in terms of her tefillos and her attempts, she is the mother of the Gadol Hador, because that's what she wanted and hoped for and cried for. And the fact is that you can't micromanage people. You can't decide how people turn out. And some people are going to get to Shamayim and have another surprise waiting for them. They're going to win the Eishes Chayil Award. And in this world, they were married to a difficult person who didn't appreciate all their attempts. They get to Olam Emes and they're Eishes Chayil. They're the best wife. Really? Nobody in this world made me feel like such a good wife. But mitzad her attempts, the fact is that in this world, not everything you do comes out the way you want it to come out. But in Olam Emes, it's waiting for you there. All your attempts, all of your efforts are waiting for you there. So that's the pshat in the Gemara in Kiddushin. Machshava tova, Kiddush Baruch Hu Metzarif al Ma'aseh. When you have good intentions, Hashem counts it as actions. But there is another way to understand this Gemara, which relates to where you're going to be today. The Ma'or Einayim, the first Chernobyl Rebbe, says on this Gemara, the word mitzarif means that Hashem combines. Mitzarif means to combine something. So according to this, machshava tova, good thoughts, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzarfa l'maisa, Hashem combines it with an action. What action, what's being combined? He says here something amazing, and I use this idea all the time. Sometimes you want to help somebody, and you're just not the right person. They don't want to hear from you, whatever it would be. You have machshava tova. You really want something good for this person. You have no access to them. But your ratzon, he says, is matzmiach hamaisa, meaning I want this good thing to happen, but I can't be the one to do it. But because of my intention, an action is born, and somebody else will do the action. And Hashem combines your ratzon, your good intentions, with their action, and Hashem's mitzarif. Nachshava tova, Kadosh Baruch Hu mitzarif l'maisa, in Shamayim, it goes up together. I'll give you a very basic example. If I wanted to go be Menachem Avel somewhere, and I messed up the times and I couldn't get there, but I really wanted to be Menachem Avel, I'm sitting in my house, and somebody who's going to walk into that Shiva house today is going to say something that's going to give a lot of comfort to the Avel. And it was my ratzon that made that happen. Now, I'm the anonymous benefactor. Nobody knows that I'm the one who was davening. I'm not the good guy who gets the award for actually having said it. But I'm the engine behind that action being done. I thought of it, I wanted it, someone else did it, and I'm responsible for them doing it. Now, here's where it relates to us. Sometimes in our personal lives, we find that you so much want something for one of your children, and you try to talk to them about it, but they don't want to hear. And you try to navigate things, but they're not really listening. In one of my Zoom classes, a woman said that she herself was a Baal Teshuva, and she wanted to raise her children, to be from kids. One of her sons, as a young adult, went off the derech. Very, 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 very painful for her. So she tried everything. She tried to talk to him. She tried to get rabbis to talk to him. She even organized an event and had a sign put up in his apartment building where he was living that maybe he'd see it and go to the event. She tried everything, but nothing worked. And she said, but I never gave up wanting and caring and davening. She said he moved to the West Coast and it was living with Gaim, and it was so painful for her. But she never gave up in her little New York home. She was like davening and wanting. She says one day his Gaiish roommate comes home and says to him, I have to tell you something. My mother told me something today that she never told me before. She told me that she's Jewish, and that means that I'm Jewish. And then the Gaiish roommate says to her son, and you're Jewish, right? She says, well, you're going to help me because I have to explore my Judaism. Mm-hmm. He says, and I want to hear about the hardcore Jews, like the real Orthodox ones. I want a Shabbat experience. I want to go to a synagogue. And I'm not going by myself. You're coming with me. I'm not going by myself. the non-Jewish roommate was in the car of him, and they're both from today. And she said, like, Machshava Tova, like, you never know who, but your wanting causes something to grow. Now I want to show you how this relates to your trip right now. A few weeks after October 7th, there was a message going around Israel, being sent on all kinds of chats. There was one little boy as one of the hostages by the name of Ohad Mandor. Ohad Mandor was an 8-year-old boy who was in captivity. And he had a birthday a few weeks after October 7th. So there was this message going around saying, say happy birthday to Ohad. Send Ohad a birthday wish. Now, I'm not a cynical person, but I'm like, where exactly am I sending this? Into cyberspace? Like, nobody knows where he is. The Red Cross didn't know. Nobody knows where the hostages were. What do you mean send Ohad? Click here to send Ohad a birthday message. I'm like, where is this going? And I remember thinking to myself, like, where are you sending this message to? What happened is that Ohad Mandor was one of the first children to be released. It was that 50-something days into the crisis, there was an exchange of terrorists, and there was a bunch of children who were let out. So he was one of them, this lovely little boy. He later told somebody that, first of all, this is just heartbreaking, long to think about it. He said for the first 2 weeks or so that he was a hostage, he was actually being held by himself. Imagine an 8-year-old by himself. I can't even imagine. He said, and then a few weeks into the crisis, there was some change of locations of hostages, and all of a sudden, the door opened, and somebody is with him who he's never seen before. He doesn't know who this person is. The person takes one look at him and says to him, "You're Ohad Mandor. Happy birthday to you." Mm-hmm. He says to the guy, "How do you know my name, and how do you know that it was my birthday?" So the guy says something unbelievable. He says, "I was being held in captivity with my captors were watching sports TV, and I was in the room, and I happened to see the TV screen from far, and they're watching a sports game. And all of a sudden, the game stops in the middle, and one of the players says, I'd like to wish happy birthday to a little boy, Ohad Mandor, who is in captivity in Gaza. And he held up a picture of you and he said, happy birthday, Ohad." He said, then, shortly after that, I was switched and here you are with me. So happy birthday, Ohad. This little boy said that until that moment, he had not allowed himself to cry. And his captors were telling him that so many people died on October 7th that no one's looking for you. You were left as dead. And then I realized that people were looking at me for me, my nation was looking for me, that my favorite soccer star, who I ever dreamed to even see, knew my name and picked up a sign and wished me a happy birthday. And I knew that people were looking for me. And it gave me the strength to continue. Ladies, it's a miracle beyond, no way to explain this. But I said to myself, look what the Gemara is telling you. Machshava Tova. You're sitting there sending happy birthday to cyberspace, wanting to wish somebody a happy birthday. And through, in some hidden site that I don't know, to this day, we don't know exactly where they were, these people. But through a TV screen and a soccer game, your birthday message got to him. That's what Machshava Tova means. Hashem is very capable. When you want something, but your hands are tied, and you're not the person to be the shaliach because you don't know where the person is, because the child doesn't want to hear from you, because the person who you feel terrible for needs their dignity and doesn't want you to talk to them about it, you sit in the privacy of your little home and you want for them. And that wanting is matzmir hamaisa. Something happens that makes life better. And I think that when we go to the South and we experience, we go back to America with a lot of machshava tova in our heart. We may not be able to affect in an actual way, but the ratzon you have this rustle for somebody. They can wake up the next day and have a little less pain in their heart, a little more relief, a better perspective, a hostage exchange, a reuniting with their family members, all because you were sitting in Somersville, USA, wanting something good for them. And I always believed that, Gemara. But then when I saw this story with Ohad Mantra, I'm like, we are so powerful. We have such an ability to affect. I wanted to share with you that I don't know how many of you have ever read Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's like one of those classics. Now, Stephen Covey was a Mormon, but that book got a lot of Jewish coverage. The Mashgichim and the Mir Yeshiva used to give it to the boys to read. It was like real Chachma B'Goyim Tamim. There's one page in that book that I always used to view it a certain way until I learned this Gemara, until I saw the story with Ohad. He has a certain graph in the book where he talks about that effective people, their circle of influence and their circle of concern overlap. He brings a diagram like this. If you're an effective person, you're not worrying about starvation in Africa if you have nothing to do about starvation in Africa. Effective people are concerned about things that they can influence. So he says you have your circle of concern, which is all the things you worry about in life, and then you have circle of influence, things that you can influence. He says effective people try to overlap their circles as much as possible. They don't bother being concerned about things that they can influence. Recently, I looked at that page, I said, that's a Mormon's perspective. From a Jewish perspective, circle of influence, everywhere. You can influence everything. You can influence somebody whose name you don't know, you never met the person, you'll never meet them. But your ratzon can go everywhere. So that is not a Jewish concept. We believe that we have influence. And I think the purpose of the trip today is to see enough to take home with you the desire to influence. And one of the beautiful aspects of this is that it's very tsanua. Meaning, when you actually go and do something for somebody, they know that you're the donor, and that's a beautiful thing to do. We want to do that kind of chesed. But when you go home and you pray for somebody, and you want good things for somebody, and somebody else does it, they're the hero, but you're the one who created that heroic thing, and you stay hidden. Nobody ever knows. You may not even know the influence of what you've done. So we're going today to inspire, to ignite, to make pictures in our mind that will allow us to take home that ratzon, that burning passion and desire to improve life for Jewish people. And the results, incredible results. Some of them we may hear about one day, some of them we may not hear about, but we really do believe in our ability to affect. I want to say that, you know, over this time period, my husband jokes that he can barely talk to me anymore because I always have the tehillim that are being added every day. Parak Tzadik Aleph is a very, very special parak. And it's the parak that I think is about a chayal in Lebanon or Gaza. It talks about how Hashem protects. Yipol mitzidcha eleth uvavah miminecha elecha lo yigash. You know, 1,000 can fall on one side of you and 10,000 on another side of you, but you will stay protected. And we daven for people that, you know, even though there's so much going on, that Hashem protects the individual who's supposed to be protected. I have a woman in my classes whose children are in Gaza and are in Lebanon. And the stories that come home are just like crazy stories, you know. We start our class every time with saying Perek Tzadik Aleph about the protection of the Chayalim. And one mother says this story that she said, Mom, like, there's nobody who knows about Hashgacha Pratis as much as us Chayalim. She said, we were lying in a home in Gaza in a very, you know, very difficult area. And we were all exhausted. There were like 20 of us and we were lying on the floor. Everybody was lying on the floor. He said, and then an RPG missile came through a hole in the wall. It went over our heads. It went out the window and landed in the next house that was basically empty except for two Chayalim who were fully geared because they were out going to do their duty. And he said they were minorly injured, but only minorly injured. He said, we're all sitting there watching a missile go over our head. And I heard this like firsthand from the boy who this happened to. And the concept, I think, of being able to realize that there's hashgacha pratit on every single person. And this is a whole topic of its own that I am not going to get into right now. But you know, we hear the tragic stories of Hayalim who died. And sometimes we hear that the person sitting right next to him is perfectly fine, but his friend is not alive anymore. And I get a lot of hashgachic questions about that. So the bottom line is, and this is something that, it's based in Kabbalah, but I find that it's an important concept to be aware of. The Chida, in a sefer called Midbar Kedmot, the Chida writes that after the conception of a person, before pregnancy starts, Malach Molech HaNefesh LaOtzar HaTzlamim, Shivhar Lo Tzelem Kirtzono. A malach takes this person, it's just a nefesh, it hasn't yet even been informed of the pregnancy, takes him to Otzar HaTzlamim. Otzar HaTzlamim means to a warehouse of life circumstances. Otzar. Shivhar Lo Tzelem Kirtzono, that he should fit and pick the form of his life. I say to my children, imagine going to Costco with a malach, and you're pushing this big cart, and you're saying, I'll take that life circumstance, I'll take this one. And then the Chida goes through a whole list. He says, Aroch HaKatzar, a long life or a short life. Shalem o Balmom, to be complete or to be handicapped. Yafeh o Mechar, to be beautiful, to be ugly. And according to the Chida, the person picks his life circumstances before he's born. So the Chayal who dies in Gaza, somebody who chose to leave the world at a certain age. And he could have been a college student in America at that time, in a car accident, Chas v'Shalom, but he was somebody who chose to die for his people at a certain point. I once gave a lecture to women who were all victims of a certain terrible type of abuse. Their children, were victims. And I taught them a bunch of sources, and then I asked them afterwards to tell me which source gave them. And they said, this chida, knowing that their child chose his own destiny, was comforting to them. Now, the chida ends up saying, "V'im kein, ein kol adam mitra'im al Hashem yitbarach ki hu bachar b'kach." He says, on a deep level, a person is not angry at Hashem about his life circumstances because he chose them for himself. Now, we have two questions on this chida. First of all, some people are really angry at Hashem. And second of all, why would anybody choose anything bad if you could choose good? So here, in terms of a person being angry, and I think this is true on all levels, there's the primary and secondary responses that a person has. And when a person goes through something very difficult, he's often in the beginning pained, angered, worried, anxious, furious. What is that? The body did not choose the circumstances. The nefesh did, the soul did. When a person comes into this world, body and soul come together. When a person hits a circumstance, which is difficult, the body says, what's going on here? I didn't sign up for this. And the soul says, I'm so sorry, I signed us both off before you got here. And that is the dialectic approach that people have towards their difficulties. I can't handle this, I can handle this. I can't handle this, I can handle this. And even when you're saying, I can't handle this, and you're not saying, I can, but Lamaisa, you are. Because your soul says, deja vu, I chose that before you were born. I knew this was coming. And your body says, shock, what is this? And that's true about every circumstance. Everybody affected by this war, all of our personal challenges that have nothing to do with the war. And then we see that there's a hashgacha, that the person himself chooses his circumstances. So the question then becomes, why would anybody choose anything that isn't good? So Rav Chaim Vital says that every Friday night when we say Kiddush, we say, Vayhu Hashemayim Ba'aretz V'chol Tzva'am. Chazal Maseches Cholin say, Al Tikret Tzva'am Ela Tziv Yonam. That Hashem created everything with its own tzivyon. Tzivyon means orientation. Perush ritzonam, according to their ratzon, their desire. L'da'atam nivra'o, they were created with their own awareness. And then Rav Chaim Vital says, v'hiskimu, these are very powerful words, v'hiskimu lo to'a mitziyot, every person born into this world, agree to the reality of his life. Hayafelahem yoter min ha'arev. That's more pretty than pleasant. What does that mean, that the soul agrees to something that's more pretty than pleasant? What does that mean? So I don't really know Kabbalistic sources, but I'll tell you my thoughts about this. Every time you go for some kind of cosmetic treatment that's a little bit painful, you're agreeing to pretty over pleasant. This is not pleasant, but since the results will make me look pretty, I'm willing to do that. When you do an exercise routine that has like crunches that are difficult, you're agreeing to pretty over pleasant. The soul does the same thing. The soul says, there's a beauty concoction here that's gonna bring out my beauty. And the Chidah says, nobody chooses only bad things and nobody chooses only good things. They choose a combination, some people more this way, that way. But every soul knows exactly how they're going to shine and therefore agree, okay, this in my life will be easy, this in my life will be difficult. This is gonna go my way, this isn't gonna go my way, because it's all part of the concoction that brings out my beauty. And I think that when we go and we experience human suffering and we see different people in different situations, the ones who survived, the ones who didn't, the ones who are rehabilitating, the ones who are still hoping for loved ones, we have to realize that every soul chooses its own reality. So we want to help people as much as possible in any way we can. But when we look, we say to ourselves, no soul goes through anything that it didn't sign up for. And the Chayalim in Lebanon, they see this, because if you're alive today and somebody who's an inch away from you isn't, there's no way to explain that other than the fact that one soul sold up for this and another soul signed up for that. And the Chayalim have this reality that nothing has to do with circumstances, because they see it, same circumstances, we were in the same place. And I think it gives us chizuk for our lives as well. There's nothing circumstantial in our life. And anything we go through is part of the beauty concoction that our soul chose for us. And we can get chizuk, we're gonna get chizuk from these people because, I'm winding down. And I'll just leave you with my last idea, okay? Should I have a minute?
Last idea, and then I wish we could have just 2 minutes for questions if anybody has.
Okay. Habotach b'Hashem chesed yisov v'veno. That became my mantra for this war. The person who has the Baal B'tachon is surrounded by chesed. What does that mean? There's a lot of interpretations. I'm not going to say them all now. Chavetz Chaim says that the Baal B'tachon knows that anything difficult he goes through is going to heal him. But it's still a bitter pill to swallow. When a person surrounds himself with chesed, sipori hashgacha, beautiful stories of achdus, a beautiful view, nice things that are emerging from this war. I love this idea. He's taking the bitter pill and he's surrounding it with a coating. So it's a capsule. A capsule, when you ingest the pill, you don't have to wince so much because it doesn't taste so bitter. When we see Sipur Hashkaha, when we say, wow, look at that chayal with the one leg who's living for the cause, and look at the achdus between different types of Jews, and look at the beautiful sunset, and look at the new shul that's being built, and look at this. You know that this war and all difficulties are gonna heal us. We know it's medicine, but it's still a bitter pill to swallow to hear suffering. But when you surround yourself and you make yourself aware of the beauty of the hashkacha, of the chesed, you're even making the pill easier to swallow. So as you look today, you're gonna see things that are sometimes bitter to see, but you also are gonna see beautiful hashkacha and you're gonna surround it. And then when you ingest the pill, it heals you and you're not wincing as much. Okay. Thank you, ladies.
I'm jealous.
Please. I wish I could be with you. I'm jealous of what you're about to do. It is the most inspiring, uplifting thing.